Well, if you're standing up saluting, then you must be from Palau. That was the national anthem called Our Palau. And Palau is in the Western Pacific. It's the first nation that will only issue visas to tourists who sign an eco-pledge promising to act in an environmentally friendly way while visiting the islands. Earlier, Sydneysider Laura Clark, now resident in Palau and a co-founder of the Palau Pledge Project, talked to Veronica Matheson about this recent initiative.
Laura, how does a Sydneysider like you find yourself in Palau?
So my husband actually was posted here to serve as the Maritime Surveillance Advisor Palau. He's actually an officer in the Royal Australian Navy, and the Royal Australian Navy has a presence in most Pacific Islands. And so we moved here in January 2015 with his job, and that's how I ended up moving to Palau.
And tell me about the island. Describe the islands to our listeners.
Palau really is it is a pristine paradise. So it is a beautiful tropical island. It's an archipelago of 500 islands, actually, in the northwestern Pacific, over 500 islands. And it is one of those places that is just very unique. So it has, for example, species of coral that aren't found anywhere else in the world. One of the largest proliferations of marine life species and fish that's found nowhere else on the planet. And it's actually a very, very exquisitely beautiful place.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. And the Pacific Islanders there, they'd be, I imagine, very laid back.
Absolutely. The culture is one of, in fact, it's really changed my perspective living here in Palau. The culture is very much one of conservation, but it's not for conservation's sake. So because Palauans are so reliant on their environment, and actually still are for survival, the nature of conserving the environment just comes naturally to them. Because without conserving the environment and preserving it for the next generation, they wouldn't be able to survive. So that culture is very active here, and it's just a very different take on that kind of Western culture that we have of we really need to save the planet. You know, that's just part of Palauan's DNA.
How do they mainly make their living?
Traditionally, Palauans lived off the land and off the ocean. So the men were the fishermen and women tended to the land and the taro patches. So taro patches and fishing are extremely important to Palauan society. And therefore, you know, that tradition is sort of still, it's ongoing, of course. However, now a large part of the economy is tourism based, because it is such a beautiful and unique place that people from all over the world like to visit.
How many tourists would come there in a year?
When I arrived in 2015, I think the previous year's tourism numbers had been around 80,000, but they spiked and jumped up to about 160,000 during 2015. So if you can imagine, Veronica, there's 20,000 Palauans in the world, 13,000 of whom live in Palau, 7,000 of whom live off-island. So the actual population of Palau, with Palauans and expats, is 20,000. A community of 20,000 people that suddenly saw a doubling of their visitor numbers, and, you know, 20,000 people versus 160,000 people, that's a big difference.
Oh, it's a lot to cope with. Why was there a need to introduce this Palau Pledge? How did that all happen?
It's a very interesting story. There's four co-founders of the Palau Pledge, myself, Jennifer Koskelin-Gibbons, Nicole Fagan, and Nane Singyo. We all come from different backgrounds. So I'm British-Australian. My colleague Jennifer is Palauan. My colleague Nicole is American, and my colleague Nane is Japanese. Jennifer and Nane had both set up home here in Palau, and Nicole and I were actually visitors because our husband's work was based here. And so it was sort of a very interesting way that we came together. We all noticed that the visitor numbers were actually having an impact on Palau's pristine environment, and rather than wait for it to get to crisis point, we all knew that something needed to be done quite urgently, because the way the visitors were behaving was not in line with Palauan culture, and we really needed to align their behavior with respect for the environment and respect for Palauan culture. So before it got to a point where things were being damaged irreparably, we needed to ensure that Palau had a system in place that was culturally rooted that could preserve this pristine paradise for the next generation.
What sort of things were they doing, the tourists, that were damaging the environment?
A lot of it is done, I'll be honest with you, it's not done maliciously, it's just through ignorance. So I'll give you an example. The coral reefs that are absolutely essential not only to Palau's survival and culture from a fishing perspective, but also from a climate change resilience perspective. Those corals, if they're damaged, some of those corals take hundreds of years to renew and regrow. And so if you're snorkeling on a coral reef and you're dragging your fins along, that coral is fragile, it's easily broken, and as I said, it can take many years to regrow. And so if you can imagine a large number of visitors coming to Palau and snorkeling on these reefs or diving on these reefs and not having that sensibility of this is fragile, this isn't rock, this is a living organism, and actually damaging it, that over time, the culminative actions of those visitors have a huge impact on the ecosystem.
How do you get that message out? Is that part of the Palau Pledge?
Absolutely, yes. It's a key part of the Palau Pledge. So again, that was just one example of certain behaviours that can damage the environment. Other behaviours are not understanding that you can't throw plastic into the ocean. You know, rubbish is something that can be disposed of at will rather than sensibly. And other things like smoking in public, which Palauans do not smoke in public. And it has actually impacted and changed behaviour of the younger Palauans because they see tourists smoking in public. They think it's something that is more acceptable. And, you know, that has an impact not only on culture, but it also has an impact on the ocean. If you can imagine the toxins that are in cigarette butts going into the ocean, just being disposed of, that has an impact again on the reef and the ecosystem. So these are some examples. There's many more. The idea is that because Palauans conserve their environment and culture for the next generation, we spoke to the children of Palau and we asked them how they would like our visitors to behave whilst they're in Palau. And they wrote impassioned letters to visitors asking them to preserve the environment. And we used that for the basis of what became the Palau Pledge. And the Palau Pledge, as you may know, is a succinct promise, and it's an oath that all visitors must undertake when they enter Palau. It's stamped into every visitor's passport in their own language, and they have to sign to say that they promise the children of Palau that they will act in a responsible way to preserve their environment and culture. That's the first part. The second part of it is that what is this behavior that we're expecting of them? So we have a passport insert that explains the pledge in detail. It explains positive behaviors that we'd like to see and those that we'd like to discourage. That explains that. We have an in-flight video that goes through, it actually is based on it's inspired by a Palauan legend of a giant who overconsumes. And so that giant falls for the large footprint that tourism has. And the children of Palau in this video actually explain to the giant how, you know, we need to preserve it and ways in which he can help the children preserve Palau. So all of this messaging is actually supported throughout the visitor touch points at the airport. And in phase two of the campaign, we're actually extending that message into the community through the business sector, through working with tour operators, retailers, hotels, restaurants, et cetera, to actually bring those messages to life within the community and at every visitor touch point.
Now, it's very unlikely, but if a visitor refused to sign this pledge when they arrive, would they be turned back?
It's a really interesting question. And I think, you know, a very small percentage of people will have questions about it. And they have had questions about it. But what we've experienced is that when they do ask the question of the immigration officers, you know, why am I having to sign it? And the immigration officer spends a moment just explaining why this is important and what it symbolizes, we haven't had anybody refusing to sign the pledge as yet. And, you know, nearly 90,000 people have signed the pledge, either coming through Palau or worldwide online. But as soon as they understand that this is for the children and this is what Palauan culture, when you're coming into somebody else's culture, you really need to be respectful of that and behave in a way that is conducive to showing your respect.
Now, recently you had Australia's Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, there, and they donated, I think, gave you a grant of, what, $80,000? Not that, you know, that's a great amount. It's a rather strange amount. I'd have imagined, you know, around at $100,000 would have been far more acceptable. But what will you be doing with that?
Well, thank you for saying that. And we hope to receive further funding from the Australian government in the future, you know, not least of all because I'm an Australian and I'm an Australian on team. And Australia has had a presence in Palau for 30 years. But that money is actually essential to phase two of our plans, which, as I mentioned before, is to take the Palau Pledge into the community and build what we're calling the Business Accreditation Program. And that really is where businesses are able to be accredited based on a criteria that we're putting together that allows them to then advertise the fact that they're pledge accredited to visitors. And that criteria will be different for different sectors. But really and truly, it's about ensuring that business owners and operators are also encouraging this good behaviour from their clients and customers.
And Laura, how does one get to Palau from Australia?
Well, I'm hoping that in the not too distant future, there will be a direct flight from Australia to Palau, because quite honestly, it would make my life so much easier. At the moment, the easiest way to get to Palau from Australia is to fly direct from one of our hubs up to South Korea and then to do a short flight down to Palau. But hopefully we'll get some direct flights.
But that's another thing you're working on, is it?
It is.
That was Laura Clark explaining to Veronica Matheson why Palau is often dubbed by travellers as the underwater Serengeti and how visitors can keep the islands pristine. For more information, visit www.palaupledge.com.